Good morning. Very happy to be here again. This is a sister house for us. We're not many around the world. So I'm fundamentally a musician, but as a musician you have to live, survive. And so my life has carried me through different paths. The first one is GRM, where I started about 30 years ago. I've been head of GRM since the end of the 90s. Then about 8 years ago, I became director of research and experimentation department within our institution, which is the Institut National de l'Audiovisuel, which I'll explain in 2 seconds. And in the last years, I have involved a lot with preservation, archival. I'm an active partner of Europeana. I'm coordinator of a European project called Presto Prime. So I'm living different lives. But among these lives, there's this work we have been doing with our group around preserving music. So INA was founded in 1975, is in charge of national broadcast archives, almost 1.5 million hours of radio and television as a national archive, 540,000 hours of digitized, accessible online for professional use. So professionals come and choose excerpts for making documentaries, news, whatever, sports. And 3 years ago, we launched our website, ina.fr, with 25,000 hours accessible online. So anybody can go there and look at the contents and even download them. I could make a whole speech about the legal issues behind that, but it's not today. So it's quite a medium company, almost 1,000 people. And it's at Brie-sur-Marne, awful place, but well, it's there. Fortunately, I spend half of my time in the French radio where the GRM is installed since the beginning. We are also in charge of the legal deposit of radio and television. We record 365 days per year, 24 hours, 88 television channels, and 17 radio networks. And that gives us already 3 million hours and 400,000 that arrive every year that are recorded, documented, stored, and made accessible only for research means. They're not open to the public. You have to go to the National Library to access them. And since this year, we're also launching ourselves in the legal deposit of internet, but mainly related to all that's communication and media. And then we have research, archive-based production, training, and a master in digital preservation. We do high-level training also since 2007. Now, the group I'm head of was founded in 1948 with another name, GRMC, then GRM in 58, and we celebrated our 50th anniversary last year. So I was born after 48, so it's a long time already. And with a lot of technological evolutions, with a lot of interesting ideas that had been carried around the time. And we are a pioneer in media art. We didn't know we were doing it 50 years ago, called Musique Concrète. And today we work in electroacoustic. I mean, with electroacoustic is any kind of music that uses technological means to exist. And acousmatic music is electroacoustic music without performers, instruments. And I will little play with these two concepts because they have different implications is what I'm going to say. 50 people, 25 composers working every year, concerts, radio, CDs, web radio programs, and GRM tools and Acousmograph, who are classics in the sound processing domain. And we have this is our heritage, 1,600 works, going back to 1948, with the first original works by Pierre Schaeffer, and with different periods of time, different technologies to keep, different formats, different kinds of works, and then a lot of radio programs, but that's more in the INA preservation. This is a 20 years old image. It's just a small presentation of our dispositive for concerts called the Acousmonium. So it's a set that can range from 40 to 80 loudspeakers, depending on the kind of musical project. And it is a performing device. It's when you present music, you put somebody will be behind at a control panel, it's a mixing desk, and will control the way the sound is diffused in space. Now I show you a more recent set of pictures. Is there a way to get the light down? You don't need to see me. I just wanted to do, well, this is a concert. In fact, it was a 80th anniversary of Pierre-Henri. Here he is, with François Bell just behind. And what I find very interesting in the photograph is not the amount of people, it's the very low amount of white hair. Meaning that we're getting younger generations to come to this music, to be active defenders, and even make a festival every year of electronica music, which is a huge success indeed, and which generates new people that are interested in our activities. Here's a vision more poetical than understandable of the concert scene with a specific disposition, with lights, a kind of visual entertainment, which is rather static. It's not a dynamic work with light and sound. Now, I'm getting into my subject. That was my introduction. I will start talking of the paradigms of musical transmission. That's my problem. My problem is I'm making music today. How can I keep it alive for the future? And the future, for me, has, as Woody Allen says, eternity is very long, mainly towards the end. So I don't know when I'll have to reuse it. So in order to understand the future, I have to understand the past and the present. So there have been there are three ways of transmitting music. The first one that goes back in the far past is oral transmission. It has been a very effective way of transmitting music with its memory deformations or evolutions, you can call them. But even today, oral transmission is very important in music. People sing, mothers sing to the children, children repeat the songs, etc., etc., etc. After the 13th century, even if there were some attempts before, the information started to be codified in music. There was some kind of representation of code that would permit somebody to reproduce, if he had a certain knowledge, the sounds that would produce a determined music that was written down by somebody. So this scheme works until today. This still works and will work in the future. But this 13th century event changed the nature of music. Polyphony is impossible without writing. You cannot control several trends of sounds that work independently and fuse together in order to form a structure. So one can see the score as a way of transmitting music, but it's mainly a way of thinking music. You can have for the first time a visual representation of all the elements that compose your music. You're no more in a strict linear evolution of music. You start developing complexity. At the end of the 19th century, sound recording was invented. And then through a certain number of developments of sound recording, and not of the sound recording itself, but the way it was being used in cinema, in radio drama, and finally, the situation in which composers started making music. Making music is taking sounds, putting them together, and imagining there is a structure, and it can be listened as a succession of sounds that make sense for our perception. That is how electroacoustic music appeared. And the good thing with electroacoustic music is that it was identified in 1948, Schaeffer said, this is musique concrète. Why is it called concrète? Because when you make it, you start from sound, and then you get to the musical abstraction. While in the previous paradigm, you start from abstraction, and then you get to sound when you perform the work. Now, in this evolution, there is a technical complexity. For oral transmission, you don't need anything, just memory, with the dangers of memory. For writing, you need paper, pencil, coding system. We'll come in a second back to the coding system. But the problem of keeping sound as music information is that you have to keep what produces sound. You have to keep a technology that is dedicated to that function. So that brings completely new problems to musical preservation. Now I speak a moment of this social system for music. So traditionally we have composers, performers, and the audience. In a more sociological approach, you call them the conceptors, the mediators, and the receptors, people that produce the ideas. This is not common only to music. All the performing arts are based on this scheme. And in some languages, I like the use of the word interpreter instead of performer. Interpreter means that it gives a certain interpretation to what the composer thought. So historically, this has worked this way, and it functions because performers and composers, they share the same codes, they speak the same language, and the performer and the audience also share the same codes. They may not know what musical writing, but they have an unconscious knowledge of musical structure, organization, and are accustomed to listening to it. Now, electroacoustic music proposes this model. As a conceptor, I'm also the performer. This is that I do not separate both actions. They are intermingled together. Often people ask me, what do you do? And I say, when I make the sounds with which I make my music. My music is highly dependent on my own sounds and not on external sounds. Now, this brings me to a second problem, which is I have my own codes. There is no shared information. It's in me, and it's not explicit. I may try to explicit it, but normally it's, well, for me, music is music. Just listen to it, and if you like it, you like it. If you don't, next time. And in the relation with the audience, the listening is not the same. When I say piano, I'm dealing with an image that is complex. I'm speaking of an instrument. You all know. I don't have to show you a photograph of a piano. I can even imagine that you have the sound in your memory. I don't have to bring a piano, play it, in order for you to recognize, to remember what the piano sound. Now, the first sound of Ludger's last music. How is it? I don't remember it. Actually, I don't remember many sounds of many music. When I listen to them, I immediately recognize them. We are in a situation in which sound and musical thought are very strongly linked. And when I listen to music, I have to build up my mind to understand the sounds, put them together, and build the musical structure. It's a very interesting listening. For me, it's not a problem. But information and sound are merged. Let's go a step further on. This is today's model. The audience comes back to the conception, to the production. That's called interactivity. I mean, I'm not just receiving in a neutral situation information. I'm doing things that will condition the information that I'm receiving. I stop here with this, just to, while I'm going in, bring the problem related with that is how to keep all that. And here I'm getting in a domain I won't explore at all, but we're in the best place in the world to discuss about that. How do we keep complex artworks? How do we keep games? What should we keep in a game? The machine, the path, the different users do, the problems they encounter, the ways they found to, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's all a methodological, and we are strongly dealing with a new kind of science, which is archivistic. How to adapt the idea of how to organize systems that can archive complex structures of information. Simple structure, simple situation. I have a book, I put it on a shelf, I make a library. I have a series of games. Mm. Now, what is there in music? I'll go for the traditional presentation. Musical tradition, well, it's not an intelligent issue. It's something that built up with time. I'm just reading the consequence. You have on one side the information, the score. So I write down how I want the music to sound. On the other hand, I have the sound, which is produced by a person moving their fingers or blowing on an object. And music comes when I combine both. Combine them through a link. In electroacoustic music, the information is strongly combined with sound. It is not independent. I cannot make an electroacoustic score. The electroacoustic score is the music itself. And the sound is highly related to a production technology. Now, here is one of the strong points I want to present, is that when I speak of the traditional moment, I need something that will link information and sound. And that is musical notation, musical writing, musical knowledge. You may know that we have scores of Greek music, we have instruments of Greek, of ancient Greek. We don't know how it sounds. We cannot decode the system. So we lost what links the information that permits the sound to be produced. So in the traditional moment model, you just need to keep the information, scores or schemes. The sound and the sound produced methods are kept by instruments, constructors, and performers. You have musical libraries and you have museums. They are completely independent. They work on their own way with their own techniques. It's not the same thing to preserve a piece of paper than a piece of wood. And they keep the music by keeping these two components. A little bit more, because they keep, there is a concept which is very interesting, is the concept of knowledge patrimony. I have a knowledge which is in my mind, which is not explicited. Building an instrument is transmitting knowledge to another person that will build the instrument with the same knowledge and the deformations that this bring. In the electroacoustic model, information is mixed with sound, which complexifies totally how and where and with which technology you will keep what produces that music. And many other elements may be involved in the musical act. Once again, in this place, we know, I find people that understand immediately what I'm saying. And it's not keeping the objects. You have to keep the objects, the functions, and the relations. In this domain, composers, let's say in a certain way, invent a language, and you have to keep the music plus the language. And there's no efficient way we can immediately find to keep the language. And the problem is not to conserve. The problem is not preservation. The problem is restitution. I want to keep something just not as a testimony of an event. I want to keep it in such a way that I can play it again in the next or in the far future. This is theory, or presentation of facts, let's say. Now let's go to problems. This is the first problem, the preservation barrier, a rift. On one side, you have people that produce contents. On the other side, we have the content preservers, documentalists, archivists, museum, etc., etc. They don't communicate. These people on the right side have to go into the work, try to get out all the information they can, we call it metadata, in order to understand what the object is about. So this is a hard task. It's a very time-consuming task. Just to give you an idea, in INA, we document sequence by sequence every news program on the television. To document 1 hour of news takes 1 day. It's the time it takes, because you're going to put the time codes, you're going to describe who is talking, you will link that to a thesaurus. Of course, afterwards, when you're searching for something, it's wonderful. We are happy to still have the people that can do it. But when you think at the huge amount of information that's being produced, this barrier is getting higher and higher and higher. That is why we speak of web semantics and things like that, just to try to understand what contents are. Now, let's see the preservation barrier from another point of view. Normally, an archive keeps a document with its integrity. I, as an archive, receive something, I have to keep it, and keep it in the best possible way without losing any part of it. If I make a musical work today, I put it in an archive can be my own library, I have a knowledge on it that gives sense to that content. Now, when time passes, the knowledge passes also. Because between these two things, for example, myself as a composer, I have the links. They're not explicited. They're in my mind. But with time, even myself, I forget. I lose. And with more time, you get the unintelligibility gap. You have sets of information and no way of linking them effectively to reconstruct the original intention. This is a very interesting view, because many objects from the past have come to us with its interpretation. We don't have the books that, Aristoteles in English? Aristoteles. You know who I mean. In German, it's Aristoteles wrote. We don't have the books. We have the different readings and rewritings that through thousands of years, 2,000 years, certain specific users have been doing in order to renew the sense of that original content in the original handwriting. I don't know how it was originally, but I can go to our library and buy a Plato book. That will be easier. And understand it, because at the same time it has been also transmitted with my actual understanding. So what we say is that in order to keep a content alive, we need intermediate readings. In other ways, we need to refresh the information regularly. And this applies very highly to the digital domain. Nobody today is thinking of keeping the slightest object with a long-term perspective on a specific container. It's impossible. You have to think on how you're going to read in the future this object and how often you would have to do it. So this permits to renew the nature of the content and to interpret it in new contexts. I was always highly interested in the ZKM as a philosophy, in the questioning of what should you keep. And the what should you keep is defined by the name of the institution. It's a museum. So a museum is object-oriented. So we have to struggle to keep the objects, and probably much more. But what I'm speaking here in the musical domain performance, we may not want to keep the objects. I wrote a piece, it's not true, but 1982 was the first GX7 from Yamaha, so that's almost 30 years ago. I wrote a piece for it. What should I do? Should I keep the Yamaha synthesizer forever? Or how do I manage to extract all the information that will permit me to reconstruct the music I made? In my case, it's, let's say, easy, because the GX7 doesn't have any specific artistic value. It's different with an artistic object in which you have to keep the integrity of the object. Now, this is what I said earlier. The traditional object have score, instruments, and practice, and I reintroduced oral transmission because still today in musical performance, oral tradition is fundamental. You cannot learn by yourself how to play piano by buying a book and getting a score and a piano. Somebody has to tell you. Yes, you can manage, but when it comes to playing Chopin or whoever composer you want, you can imagine, it's impossible. Somebody strengthens the link between the knowledge and the sound and gives you a certain number of cues that permit you to arrive to the final result. And these components have specific places where they are kept. Museums, libraries, conservatories, where this information and this knowledge is modelized and kept. Now, what happens with contemporary music? We can have scores in media, then we know what you do, library, museums, conservatories, etc., etc., but then we can have a set of completely unrelated contents. Performing, machinery, diagrams, software operating system, computers, functional descriptions. Now, who's in charge of keeping that? In our today's cultural structure, who is in charge? Who has? In the library, I have a librarian. In the museum, I have a museum librarian. In the conservatory, I have a teacher. Who's in charge of the technology? And if somebody's in charge, it probably will be from a machine point of view, and not from the functioning point of view. So here we have an open issue. And as you see, there are many profiles that answer to that question. So here I define a contemporary music work. I give me an idea of Zeit. 10? 10, okay. So I'll go quickly. So here's a diagram. So you have a musical work. I put in blue what we know how to preserve, and in black and white, the other elements that contribute to the existence of a musical work. Now, for example, the right lane is, I have a computer that has an operating system, that has a software with which I create new instruments. For example, I call them instruments, that will interact with the scores and the film I'm projecting at the same time, for example. Now, this is a whole, this is easy to understand. And I have functional descriptions and schemes of all this. Or I may have, or they may be in my mind. Here, there's always a strong issue with explicitation of how you organize the work. Now, I'm going to skip the three next slides. Well, this is the general presentation. So in order to keep all this, there are three actions. You have to identify and describe what's inside. You have to organize the preservation. I have a film. I have recorded sounds. I have still images. So where are they? Who owns them? Where do I keep it? Who is in charge of keeping them? Those kinds of things I can more or less manage. And then I have to establish functional descriptions and schemes. And I see a moment there, which is deciding what do you need to keep, what does it do, what relation has it with the previous step, how does it do it, does the description already exist, what is its life expectancy, etc., etc. There are many questions that I, as a digital curator, should ask myself when addressing to a musical work. So here are examples, I think, of things I may want to keep. A sound processing tool, a max patch, which is a huge amount of relations among the components. So if I keep this, will it be enough? Or I have to know exactly what function each link does. This is not so difficult. No, I could imagine, and it already exists, a system that extracts the links. It's just processing and gives me a list of the links and the way they interact. But what I'm missing here completely is, why did you do this? What was the original intention? What is the sound that has to be obtained with this? Which are the main parameters that are concerned in your work or in my work? And then there's these kinds of objects, which are sound sequencers. It's organizing sounds in layers and through time, which are in itself a preservation environment, because behind this, there may be hundreds or thousands of files, of sound files, of bits of sound files, of bits of processing, etc., etc. Come back here in a second. There is a very efficient invention that has arrived in the last years. It's called OAIS. No relation with OAI, you heard a while ago. This is the charms of technology. It's Open Archive Information System. It mainly defines... I had to kind of look here, sorry. So you have on one side the producer, whatever he produces in whatever domain. Then you need a preservation model that is strong enough to take care of all these components. This is an open model. And then you have the consumer, the one that will come eventually after a certain amount of time to retake that information and represent it. May I remind you this first image I showed you a while ago, we're in the same model. And we have to assume that in performing music, the performer has a central role in this kind of things, is taking the information, giving it a sense, and sending it away to the consumer. Now, present and future. The first thing we did in the last years was just identify what, make a list of what is there to be preserved in order to make a work in the future. And you may have gone through this process. We went through this process two or three times which is doing musical archaeology. Musical archaeology is you have a score, you don't know, you have some machines, you have a recording, and you try to reconstruct artificially with recognizing things how the processing was done or there were special effects. It takes weeks, and it may not be a good result. So the first thing is, since we work in structured institutions, an archive has very precise rules on how to act and how to proceed in order to keep the contents. We don't at all. So let's structure our own domain first. Let's make a list of things you need to keep in order to be capable of reproducing a work. There is a second method that has been used, also is the documentalist method. While you are working, somebody is taking notes of what you do. It's a very hard work in some institutions like IRCAM, and I name IRCAM because we have been strongly associated in all these projects. They have what is called a tutor that will take in charge all these components and all the relations and try to describe the better he can. That's the past, the present. In the present, we are starting to develop embedded self-describing functions in software in order to automatically generate the necessary information. Just a simple thought, a simple thought. In most of the software today you buy commercially, you have an undo function. I mean, I did something, I undo it. I can undo in some programs until the beginning. In fact, it's a time machine. But it's a completely unstructured time machine because there's no hierarchy of actions within that. So this is an idea on which we are working. And in the future, maybe not so far away, develop embedded systems capable of organizing predefined information with structured methods. It's what we call the iArchive. I work and things are archived, at least in a restricted domain. And I show you in a second how you can imagine doing those things. We have been working on several problems. Musica, which was the first to describe the musical environment. Kaspar, which is finishing now, which is preservation for based on OAS method to apply to scientific and artistic contents. This was a very interesting project to modelize, and we have a certain number of case studies, very interesting, of different kinds of works. Presser Prime, which started this year, which I'm currently coordinating, in which the big archives are working together, audiovisual archives, in order to think long-term preservation. What does it mean, keeping our digital contents forever? And a project is going to start next month, which is called Gamelan. Active Environment for Music Management and Archiving. It's a French-based project, which I'm going to do. So this, the Gamelan is based on the idea that you are making a musical work, so you have it's not strictly oriented towards music, but you'll see that it has a strong music dimension. You have a sound sequencer, you have processing tools for sound or for other kind of information, and the green arrows represent relations between some elements in one place and the other. Normally, all this is working within an operating system that controls the software, that controls that certain actions are done and are not. So Gamelan is here, between both. It's create an intermediate screen that will be capable of managing the actions, evolutions, and hierarchies within this. It's keeping track of action through time and imagining an efficient tool to travel through time, organize them in an easy-to-access timeline based on user archival preferences. Sorry to go back here. This, even for me, who made this work, it takes me hours to get back there, in there. I have to listen to sound to know where the information I'm looking for is. There's no hierarchy. Everything is presented with the same level. So if I have already a certain number of preferences, I can imagine that certain actions can be highlighted in order to give indications on where the ideas are functioning within a musical structure. Functional links to specific software, GRM tools and Macs. So there will be more developed functions to extract information, to put them in block notes that will organize the information, and management of annotations and hierarchy. Annotations means here that in a certain moment, the user has to say something, has to say, this is the sound that is really important. And the system cannot extract that kind of information, but it can remind the user to highlight, to organize, to structure. So it's not an automatic system. It's the first step towards the simplification of the annotation process. So to end my presentation, archiving is based on the durability of objects. And our mind is built with that concept. Now, we are dealing with unstable objects. They change. So the archival process has to be completely reformulated, and specific actions have to be undertaken to keep all that makes that new kind of objects, which we may call virtual, which are mainly digital, but which are not only virtual. They can have strong links with the real world. They can have links with people, links with many kinds of things. And this is the new paradigm for conservation. We're not conserving closed systems, small universes as a book, as a film, as an image. We're conserving open systems where sometimes you really don't know where they end. That's all.